Good evening and welcome to part 6 of 20th Century Controversies. I thank everyone for coming out and braving the cold coming to learn Torah together. So this week I wanted to explore with you a halakhic issue that certainly didn't start in the 20th century, but with both societal norms and technology, as we'll see, changed in the 20th century, questions about Kol Isha and its scope have been evaluated and analyzed by modern-day authorities. So I want to look through some of the primary sources in the Gemara and the early poskim, as well as taking a look at what modern-day authorities have to say. So there are a couple of different layers of Kol Isha, so I'll try to uncover them one by one. So you'll see here, no pun intended with uncovered, and see what exactly the scope of the halacha is and how it is meant to be applied today. So source one in Maseches Brachos, in the context of the laws of Kriya Shema, of the recital of the Shema, it mentions several things that one is not allowed to say the Shema in the presence of. And those include different parts of the women's body and other things like that. So we'll take it one by one. Amar Rav Chizda said, Shok be'isha erva, either the thigh or the bottom part of the leg. Different opinions about what's called the shok actually extends. But he said that's considered erva. That's considered nakedness. And just actually to be clear, while there are more parts of the body that are considered nakedness with regards to women, there are also parts that would also be forbidden to say blessings and other things in front of for men as well. Yes?
Is there a difference between if it's a young girl or a married woman or an old woman?
Yes. So an old woman, not. I can't think of any differences for an elderly woman. For a young girl, and it's subject to discussion at what age, but for a young girl, there's a difference. Below a certain age, certainly below age 3, no parts of a young girl are considered erva. And for a married woman, and it's one of the things that the Gemara mentions, it's not going to be the main focus of the shiur, and that is the hair of the married woman. That status of hair of a married woman does change from when a woman is unmarried to when she's married. That's a topic in and of itself, which maybe we can touch upon if we have time, or maybe in another shiur. But also the source is in this context as well. So it says, Shok be'isha erva. Shenamar quotes a verse from Yeshayahu, please shok ivri naharos, that uncover the leg and pass through the rivers. So there's verses from the prophets that the rabbis learned that these verses contain descriptions of some sort of nakedness. And it says, Tigel ervaseich, gam tirei cherpaseich, so your nakedness shall be revealed, and your shame shall be seen. Amar Shmuel says, and this will be the focus of the shir, Kol be'isha erva. As it says in Shir Ashirim, Ki kolech arev umarech naveh. It's as sweet as your voice, and your countenance is alluring. So Amar Rashashis, Sa'ar be'isha erva, the hair of a woman is erva. It says, Sarech ke'eder ha'izim, your hair is like a flock of goats. And the analogy is maybe not one that would first come to my mind. But these are different. These are different things. Different things that one is not allowed to say. A man, at least, and for some parts even a woman, is not allowed to say Kriya Shema in the presence of.
So your voice meaning just your voice, like just talking or just singing?
So that's what we're going to see. For right now in the translation, I left it as voice, because that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Kol Be'isha Erva. The voice of a woman is like nakedness. So we'll have to see, what does that refer to? Does that refer to a speaking voice, a singing voice, something else? So at this point, from this Gemara, it's somewhat unclear. So who and what are we speaking about? So in the following sources, we're going to see what the scope of this prohibition is. The immediate context in the Gemara is talking about the recital of the Shema. So are these things only prohibited to be in the presence of, to look, to listen to when one is reciting the Shema? Or does it apply at other times as well? Also, is there a difference between one's wife and other women? So Rashi says in source 2, so erva, what does it mean? What's the limitation when it comes to erva, to nakedness? Rashi says, lihistakel, to look at. In some contexts, stakel is more of a gazing type of look. Sometimes it's just seeing. But he says that these things, really with the exception of the voice, are things that are prohibited to look at. And he doesn't really qualify that. It seems to be for all times. It says, v'chein be'ishto l'kriyashma. And also for his wife, when saying kriyashma. Now, the difference is women other than one's wife or one's immediate family are in the category of arayostim, or forbidden relationships. So presumably this is speaking about the hair, the bottom leg, and the voice are all with regard to women who are prohibited to a particular man. So a wife is not an erva to her husband. Is not a relationship that we considered arayos, a forbidden relationship to her husband. When she's in nida, so she is. However, some of the both stringency and leniency the laws that apply to arayos apply somewhat differently to a wife when she's in nida as opposed to other women. But otherwise, one's wife is not one of the arayos. To the contrary, so Rashi says listakel. It says v'chein be'ishto l'kriyashma. So it sounds like, and it's not clear, but it sounds like these things are off limits for a man all the time for most women, and for his wife, there's, even though she's not prohibited to him, even though she's not one of the arayos, it would still be prohibited to be in the presence of either these physical things or the singing of his voice or singing of her voice when he's saying Kriya Shema. The Mordechai, one of the earlier authorities in source 3, quotes Rav Haigon, who is from the period of the Gaonim, one of the earlier authorities over 1,000 years ago, and he says, Perush Rav Haigon, dechol hani le'inyan kriyashma, that all of these things, the shok, the voice, the hair, when it says that it's erva, that's all in the context of when one is reciting kriyashma. And perhaps at other times there would not be a prohibition. And further in the Mordechai, I didn't copy it all here. He mentions that there could also be a factor of if one is accustomed to seeing or hearing these things, that it may in fact have an impact on the halacha. He points out that in his society, people weren't particularly careful about Kol Isha. But he quotes the opinion of Rav Haigon, who says that these restrictions are only when One is saying Kriya Shema.
Did he say why?
Why
Kriya Shema as opposed to any other tefillah?
So the immediate context of this Gemara is speaking about Kriya Shema. So you can make the argument that this is because the Gemara is talking about Kriya Shema in its broader discussion, so maybe these things only apply to Kriya Shema. You mentioned the Gemara doesn't say.
I mean, even you would imagine the subject matter of the Shema is such that, you know, because you're pronouncing Hashem's name and it's, you know, his centrality in the past, present, and future, you know, anything that would cause a distraction to take you away from that thought is probably deemed to be inappropriate.
Right, right. And I imagine that's the understanding, that we have an extra level of concentration when saying brachot or kriya shema, and similar to what we were discussing with the mechitza. However, if one is just saying kriya shema, not praying in the context of a minyan and a shul, so we see it does seem clear that there's no that if let's say I daven mariv a little bit early, so I have to repeat kriya shema. So I don't need to put up a mechitza if my wife's there, if any woman is there, though there may be a restriction on if someone was singing or etc. So we have differences of opinion about whether it's only during Kriya Shema, presumably because of this heightened level of concentration required, or if it's a general thing, that in general men are not permitted to be exposed to these things of women who they're not married to or related to. So that's our question. Now, in source 6, we're going to try to figure out whether, when it says kol be'isha erva, is that the singing voice, speaking voice? What exactly does it refer to? So the Gemara in Brachos that we saw is somewhat unclear. There's another Gemara in Kiddushin on source 6, which says, Jared Lemar Mar Shlomo Liyalta. He says, let the master give shalom, give greetings of peace to Yalta, my wife, Amar Le, Hachi Amar Shmuel. But Shmuel said, and we saw him in Brachos, Shmuel said, Kol Be'isha Erva. So it sounds like what? Does this sound like it's referring to singing, speaking?
Singing.
Mm-hmm. It seems like he's asking to give greetings to my wife. And he says, no, can't do that. Kol be'isha erva. Sounds like he's saying I can't engage someone else's wife in conversation because that conversation involves kol. A service, it doesn't say anything about singing. The context here is he's saying send greetings. So that sounds like possibly this concept of kol be'isha erva that we saw may apply to kol, literally, the voice. So another sheet?
Right here.
You came at a good time. So we were just discussing, one, when we say kol isha, the voice of a woman is nakedness, is that speaking or singing? And two, is the prohibition only during Kriya Shema or any time? So in source 5 explaining this question, it says, ve'ela miyu nira didafka kol shel she'ela shalom, Oba shava shalom ki asim deika karov hadas. So the Rashba seems to be saying that we have a distinction, that with singing, there's something about a singing voice that is considered erva. However, a speaking voice, that's only in the context of more intimate kind of conversation. So perhaps when the Gemara is in Kiddushin, is when Rav Nachman suggested that Rav Yehuda send peace to his wife's, that maybe that was considered a conversation that was not appropriate. And like we said in several of the topics that we've spoken about, some of that may be dependent on societal norms, though I think there are certain things that are objective, would be objectively off limits, but perhaps this is the fact that just passing along greetings would be considered a breach of modesty. You know, it's probably not something that, if some would say for better or for worse, but it's not something that is really a societal norm where we are, though in halacha one does find sort of objective limitations on interactions between people who are not married. So this concept of kol be'isha erva in the context of the Gemara Kedushin, which is send greetings to my wife. So the Rashba in source 5 understands that to be if it is a greeting or a conversation that's, I guess, more intimate than what the is considered appropriate, then that would be kol be'isha erva, that would be subject to that. However, just conversation or just the voice is not considered erva, and that is regard to the speaking voice. So in source 7, we're going to get to the question that's going to be relevant in the 20th century and by extension the 21st century. And that is the prohibition, whether it's Shema or at any time, but the prohibition of either these uncovered parts of the body or the voice, does that depend on what one is used to? Does that depend on societal norms, on cultural norms, or is it objective? So let's see what the Rambam says. The Rambam says in Source 7, Vistakel afilu ve'etzpa katana shel ishash v'niskaven lahanos kemish shenistakel b'mokom hatoref. So he says that even that if a man is gazingly at a woman who is forbidden to him, even if he looks at her little finger with the intention to derive pleasure, that is like looking at other parts of the body that are normally covered. And he says, "Afilu lishmoa kola erva o liro saara aser," and even listening to her voice, or looking or gazing at her hair is forbidden. So perhaps the Rambam can be read as saying that he's, for example, in the first part of the Rambam, when he says that looking at the little finger with the example of the intention of deriving pleasure, so that's like looking at nakedness. And he says so too, listening to a voice or looking at the hair, that also is like looking at other parts of the body that are considered objectively nakedness. So perhaps that suggests that there's some kind of subjectivity in this. Maybe if one is listening to a voice or looking at the hair, looking at the little finger to derive some sort of pleasure, then that would be considered nakedness. But maybe in and of itself, it's not. So that's what's unclear in the Rambam. And I think the Rambam can be read to understand that there are certain things that are objectively considered nakedness, but other things that can be attracting, or a person can get, we're not saying saying it's a good thing, but a person can get pleasure aroused by these things, but maybe objectively, across the board, they're not necessarily forbidden, but if one is aroused by them, so that would then put them in the category of erva. And as we'll see, that will have an impact on how this is addressed in societies where, like, certainly where hearing the voice of a singing voice of the woman is people are more accustomed to and probably doesn't arouse most people. So now working our way down to the Shulchan Aruch, to the practical halacha, Shulchan Aruch says in source 8, Yesh li zahir mishmias kol zemer isha bishas kriyashma. So you'll notice he says kol zemer, the singing voice. And he says this is during the time of kriyashma, and the Ramah says, afilo biishto aval kol haragil bo eno erva. So similar line of reasoning to the Rambam, he says that a kol haragil bo eno erva, that if one is a voice that one is accustomed to hearing, and presumably a singing voice that one is more accustomed to hearing, that is not considered erva. Sounds like for Kriya Shema it's different, but in general, a voice that one is accustomed to hearing is not considered erva. So that sounds like, I guess, one, a voice who someone is not accustomed to hearing, that would be considered erva. And two, I don't think the poskim say this, but maybe you could understand this as saying that if in general we're more accustomed to hearing women's singing voices, so maybe that might fit into the category. The poskim do address it. Even the ones with lenient opinions aren't willing to give a wholesale endorsement, but it does seem to emerge that it depends on how accustomed we are to hearing this.
In this time, besides the Shema, what other prayers would be recited out loud anyway?
Birkat Hamazon.
But in shul.
What
I'm trying to ask is that has this been stated the case because that was the prayer that was recited out loud, particularly by women?
Why this in particular was?
They seem to emphasize the Shema over and over again, and I'm wondering, is it because like that would be the only prayer that was actually sung out loud?
So the Shema, I think, is really referring as was more expansive to any mentions of Hashem's name, any blessings.
So that's the reason why they mention the Shema.
Right. I think the Shema is really the prototype for all types of what's called Dvarim Shebek Dusha, mentions of Hashem's name.
I thought it would go what Tefillah is. Tefillah is always the Shema.
Right. So I think Tefillah would be the same thing. And as we saw a couple weeks ago, within a shul, you have this added requirement of a mechitza, regardless of erva or not, or even if there's no concerns of erva. That's a special thing with public tefillah and with the shul. But Kriya Shema, I think, is a prototype for, or is being used in this case as the prototype for just mentions of Hashem's name. So I think the same would apply to things like Birkat Hamazon or Brachot or anything of the like.
If there's like a lot of men are singing and there's a couple women, are they allowed to sing because it gets drowned out?
So we'll see. So we'll see. And what you're touching upon is a concept, and we'll see. It's the contemporary poskim consider this. There's a concept mentioned in Maseches Megillah, Treikale Lo Mishtai, that two voices aren't heard together. And the context of the Gemara there is actually with the reading of the Megillah. Can you have multiple people reading it? And it's a concept that's applied in different areas of halacha that sometimes if someone wants to say a bracha on behalf of someone or kiddush, that we avoid having multiple voices because if we have multiple voices, so we assume that a person can't really hear any one of them so clearly. So perhaps that would be a consideration if there are multiple voices being sung. So maybe if we're worried about drawing attention or a person's attention being drawn, then maybe that would not be the case it's not being drawn in one direction. So we'll see when we get to the 20th century. But that is a consideration that's mentioned. So now we'll take a look at it, just building up the discussion about how will we address in the 20th century. What kind of singing are we speaking about, or what kind of singing is there? Is it any type of singing, or that's problematic, or is there a particular type of singing or interaction that's problematic? And two, does it matter if a man knows what the woman looks like? Is it just the voice itself, or is it that he knows that the combination of knowing what the woman looks like and her voice is something that will arouse him? So, in source 9, there's a Gemara in Megillah. It says Tanur Rabbanan. Rachav Bishma Zinsa, that Rachav, who is the beginning Shazana of Yehoshua, Isha Zanah, ended up being Yehoshua's wife. She did tshuva and ended up becoming a very righteous woman, but she was a zonah, she was a prostitute, and apparently she was very beautiful. So it says, Rachav Bishma Zinsa, that just the mention of Rachav's name would arouse people. Ya'el Bekola, Ya'el with her voice. Avigail Bischirasa, Avigail just by remembering her. Michal Basha'ol Biryasa, and Shaul's daughter Michal is David Amelech's wife. With seeing her, Amar Yitzha, Kola Omer Rachav Rachav, which I just did, Miyad Nikari. Maybe it's not a problem, because he said anyone who says Rachav Rachav, the name of Rachav, twice, immediately experiences a seminal emission. That the saying her name arouses, because of her great beauty, apparently arouses the person. Amalei Rav Nachman, Ana mina Rachav Rachav velo ichlas li. I just said Rachav Rachav and nothing happened to me. Amalei kika imna biyoda umekira. That this refers to someone who, when I said this, it refers to someone who knows her personally and recognizes her. So if someone knew her personally, then the mention of her name would cause arousal. But it sounds like the mention, but just in and of itself, it's not going to have an effect. And maybe we can look at the other people who it mentions. Is Ya'el by her voice? So maybe it's like Rachav. Maybe the response about Rachav is the same. That maybe the whatever arousal is caused by the hearing of the voice is only when a person also knows what the woman looks like. So this Gemara seems to indicate that it's not just the voice or the other things that are considered arousing, but it's when they're combined with someone knowing what the woman looks like. And in source 10, the Gemara in Sota says that if there are men sing and women respond, and women sing and men respond, and this is understood to be some type of, I guess, more vulgar, you know, bar song or something like that. It seems to be understanding of the context here that's like a very bad thing. That's considered immodest. So we see just the different examples in the Talmud of singing, and this is one example that involves men and women singing, responding, each one having their solo. It says in the context of an immodest type of song or lyrics that this is something that's not proper. So in Source 11...
It's not proper for women, but it's okay for men. Are you saying it's not proper for either?
Or it is not this type of responsive...
Our singing shouldn't be proper for either.
Well, the type of responsive singing is considered, and I think many understand it to be, referring to a more vulgar type of music. And I say that it's not so apparent here, but we'll see. One of the modern posts mentions this Gemara and makes that classification. So that's why I brought the sources here. But right, it's like the men would sing, the women would respond. The women would sing, the men would respond. And according to at least one of the modern poskim, it refers to a more vulgar type of singing, as opposed to what we'll see, things like zmirot or other things. So in Source 11, it's a very comprehensive article by Rabbi Chaim Jack there from New Jersey. So he summarizes some of the opinions that we'll take a look at inside. So I left this... Maybe we can refer back to this and just have this in mind. So what do we have so far? So we had the discussion about, one, is it just during Kriya Shema or any time? And it seems to be the understanding of the postgame that at least in theory, it applies to any time, to not just Kriya Shema. And even one's wife, even during Kriya Shema. We have the Rambam and quote in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah that does seem to suggest that it's the status of Erva somewhat depends on how used to these things we are. And now we'll take a look into the 20th century about these questions, as well as what we just saw about whether one needs to know what the woman looks like in order for it to be a prohibition, and the nature of the singing. So in Source 12, some of these are kind of long. I'll say them outside. The Tzitz Eliezer, I enjoy doing these because a lot of the shiurim we see people who we've seen before. We saw the Tzitz Eliezer with the Melchitza question. He's come up before. He was Eliezer Waldenberg. He was the Posek at Shari Tzedek Hospital in Jerusalem. Great expert in medical ethics, as well as other areas of halacha. So, when addressing the question of kolisha in modern times and the modern applications, so he has a couple of considerations. He says, this is specifically addressing the question of what about on the radio or through a recording. So, when we say Kol b'isha'er, the voice of a woman is nakedness. Does that mean the sound, or does it literally mean kol, that it has to be the voice? And if it's not the voice, then maybe it's not kol. So Tzitz Eliezer actually puts forth this position. He says that when it's through some type of reproduction of the voice, so you're not hearing the voice, you're hearing electric waves, sound waves. It's not a voice. And to bolster that case, he says we know from other areas of halacha and other mitzvos where either the voice or sound is necessary, so it has to be the natural sound. For example, Kriyas HaMegillah. I can't listen to a recording. I can't watch on TV someone reading the Megillah. Even I can't have a live stream and fulfill the mitzvah of reading the Megillah. Similarly, he mentions with shofar that I can't listen to a recording of a shofar and be yotze the mitzvah. I have to hear the actual thing. So he brings these two examples of mitzvah that are dependent on either the voice or sound, and he says that you see from those mitzvot that It can't just be a reproduction of the sound. It has to be from the source that makes the sound, from the shofar itself, or from a person reading the Megillah. And therefore, or similarly, when we say kol, and we say that the kol is like erva, that technical issue is only from a voice that's heard in person, but hearing a reproduction of the voice would not fall under the prohibition of kol isha.
But Rabbi, if you look at source number 9, there's a recognition here that you're not necessarily, it has nothing to do necessarily with the voice itself, but whatever, even if it's a reproduced thing, what it evokes. So here, you know, the thought, the sight, even if you don't see the person, the idea that women can arouse a feeling in man just by thinking of them, then it shouldn't matter in this case that even if it's a reproduction of the voice, it's still in keeping.
Why should it make a difference?
Because you're still hearing the woman's voice, even if it's the intermediary. Well, number 9, you're not even hearing a woman's voice yet. That arousal still is being caused.
Right. So the Tzitz Eliezer at the end of the tshuva does say that nevertheless a person should know themselves and control themselves accordingly. But with regard to the technical prohibition of kol isha, a reproduction of the voice in and of itself would not be considered kol isha. And you mentioned with source 9, with the Gemara and Megillah, that the immediate context of that Gemara isn't necessarily this issue of kol isha, but just a general discussion about whether to have feelings of attraction that are not considered proper, whether that's dependent on knowing what they look like. Mm. And I'll reference back here for the next tshuva we'll see. So that's not discussing the immediate context of kol isha. So true, I think that Tzitz Eliezer would say that if one feels that there is concern that they'll get inappropriately aroused, so that's something just in general to avoid. But as far as the technical erva, the technical issue of the voice, and there are certain things with erva in the broader conversation that are somewhat that can be objective. Like why is a different discussion with a lot of nuances, but with the hair of a married woman, why is the hair of an unmarried woman not erva, and the hair of a married woman erva? So sometimes these things are a technical categorization. So this seems to be how the Tzitz Eliezer is understanding it, that the issue of kol isha is a objective category, but that refers to the actual voice. But something that's a reproduction of the voice, so that's subject to any other considerations of tzniut or things of the like. But not that technical category of erva. So that's what he says, and he brings support from other cases where mitzvot are dependent on a voice or sound, that a reproduction of that voice does not fulfill the mitzvah. In source 13, Rav Avadya Yosef takes somewhat of a different approach. He says, so the question is, what about listening to a female singer on the radio? So first he says he doesn't really buy the whole distinction between a microphone, a recording. He said one of the poskim called it like a bas kol instead of a kol, like a sound. Rav Avadya was kind of saying, like you were saying, that if our concern is arousal or whatever it is, recorded, not recorded, it sounds like a voice, and so he wasn't so crazy on making that a distinction. Mm-hmm. However, he says that whether a person knows what the woman looks like is a factor. But he says, this is in the second paragraph, he says, that he quotes the Gemara that says that the that the Yetzer Hara is only a sholet, is only dominant on something that the eyes can see. Right, so he brings that Gemara to say that the Yetzer Hara is not interested in what the eyes don't see. So that's Gemara in Sanhedrin, but the Gemara that we saw in Megillah also seems to suggest that these other considerations, the mention of the name and the hearing of the voice, that maybe that's only if a person knows what is either it's in front of the person or if they know what she looks like. But seemingly, if a person doesn't know what the woman looks like, so then just the sound of the voice in and of itself would not fall under the prohibition of kolisha. So on one hand, you have a stringency and a leniency. The stringency is he doesn't really buy the distinction between a reproduction of the voice and the voice itself.
What are you doing Birkat HaMazon? When everybody starts singing, I mean,
we're not done yet.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
That's a good question, but one I say the best for last. But it's an opinion that definitely is practical. What about a question? There are probably two components with that. One, it's a situation that comes up and. Always good to avoid any types of conflict. And two, and this is something that's going to be mentioned, is unlike this Gemara and Soda that we saw, which is understood to be referring to a kind of immodest, vulgar singing. Here we're singing Zmirot and benching. There's nothing. The words and the act of singing is no one would say is immodest. If anything, it's certainly to praise Hashem and the opposite of anything immodest. So Rav Ovadia basically makes that his the main thrust of his argument that one. If you don't know what the person looks like, so then the Yetzer Hara isn't interested in that. And therefore, if he says that if a person is listening to the radio and doesn't know what the singer looks like and has never seen a picture of the singer, so then he can listen. He said if he, Haravadia says that if the person had seen a picture of the woman, then it's already connecting the voice to the woman herself, but he says that if a person has never seen, doesn't know what the woman looks like, so then there's not an issue of kolisha.
But the subject matter, what if she's saying chagadya or bamiya b'steshein?
Right. So, and
it matter.
Right, and that's we'll see in source 14 that could be a consideration that. Right, the Yiddish popular songs, right, are different than Chag Gadya. It's not clear
that,
right. It's not 100% clear that there's a distinction. Though we'll see the Sri Deish, one of the postkim of the 20th century, does indeed make that distinction. Rav Chil Yaakov Weinberg. Right, so Rav Adya says that if you don't know what she looks like, it's not an issue of kolisha, but if you do know what she looks like, so then it's a problem. And that could even be if you saw a picture of her. But if you don't know her at all, then not a prohibition of kolisha. And in source 14, he says that if you don't know what she looks like, and it's a recording. So then you can even say brachot or say kriya shema in the presence of that. So maybe other issues that you're listening to the radio and it's going to be distracting just in general, but he said that... There are other reasons why it may be distracting, but he says if you have the radio tuned on, you don't know what the singer looks like. That would not be an issue. That would not be fall under the prohibition of kol isha because you don't know what she looks like. She's not in front of you. So both for the general prohibition and even for kriya shema, because we saw in earlier sources that. Perhaps with one's wife, who's normally not one of the arayos, kriya shema could be different. But Ravadi says, there's a singer, a song on the radio, don't know what she looks like, you could even say kriya shema without violating a prohibition of kol isha. So the really should be source 15, it's not numbered, but these three, the eish on the bottom of page 3. So the context of this Tshuva was Rabbi Weinberg, Yaakov Weinberg. So he was asked a question by organizers of a youth group, I think in France, called Yeshurun, because it's kind of like an NCSY type of thing. And the question was about. At their Shabbos meals and Havdalah, things like that, there were they thought that having boys and girls both singing and both participating is something would be something that would be very meaningful and inspiring, and they wanted to know if that would be something that would be a problem because it is was a co-ed group. It was also part of the question he addressed, but in this context. Would there be leniencies for boys and girls singing? If they're singing Zmirot, they're singing benching, they're participating in Havdalah. So this is a question he addressed. So he addresses a couple of points. One, do you have this leniency, or is it a factor of what you mentioned before, the fact that there could be more than one person singing. So maybe we invoke the concept of multiple voices can't be heard, which we'd have for other areas of halakha. So maybe, and maybe also from the perspective of drawing attention, that if you're not focused on one, and maybe we find this concept by mitzvot that multiple voices can't be discerned or heard, so does this apply for kol isha? Let's say you have... a choir singing, or you have multiple voices together. So he says that he doesn't seem to be so enthusiastic about that in and of itself, but he quotes Rav Hildesheimer, the great rabbi in Germany, who he said did have this this reasoning, and he speaks with great respect for Rav Hildesheimer, that ultimately the German Orthodox community... really thrived and was he was very successful, especially in secular Germany, of keeping where it was really the epicenter of the Reform movement, but that Rav Hildesheimer and Shimshon Raphael Hirsch and all those were very successful in keeping people religious. So he said that if someone is as great of a scholar as that, so he'll quote that as a position that was proposed. And secondly, on page 4, he says, V'yesh od snif lahatir, that I also have a basis to be lenient, to permit. And in halachic literature, when we see a sniff is like a little branch. Generally, it's used by poskim to indicate that with this argument alone, they wouldn't make their case or that case can't stand, but we'll throw in another factor to permit leniency. So he does present this as a sniff, something that on its own he wouldn't feel comfortable permitting, but sort of throws in there as an additional consideration. And he says, Yesh od snif lahat, there is miros kodesh. So even with the consideration, so we address the question of multiple voices. But maybe with smiros, we have another consideration. So al pi ma shekazav haramav, Ibn Ezer, shekol she'eino oseh derechi barak havanaso l'shem shemayim mutter, that if it applies to other contexts, even with some types of physical contact, that if it's not done derechi, but it's not done in an affectionate type of way, so then it would be permitted. And he says that in the case of Zmiro, so he says, right, this is all l'shem shemayim, that there's not something that is being done immodestly or to arouse. That these they're singing, they're singing, says Miros Kodesh. They're participating in Avodas Hashem. So he finds grounds to permit it, and keep in mind this was in the context of like an outreach group. And he says, "Va'af sheish lechelik bein shimush benashim uvein shmiya kol zemer mikol makom yishlomar the kaven she mazmir mizmiras kodesh gam keim miskavanim l'shem shemayim." That we don't have a, we're not concerned with sort of the immodesty. And he says the opposite: "Kedei la'orer rikshus." Datiim etzel habanot v'le'tad b'libam chibat l'kotche Yisrael, that it'll have the contrary of a negative effect. It says it'll awaken their feeling and their enthusiasm for Yiddishkeit, and he said it'll be a wonderful thing. So he says, therefore, yesh lismoch al hamakilim. Therefore, one can rely on the lenient opinions. So just the language of Vishuva, both by saying the distinction between zmirot and other things as a sniff, as a additional consideration, and generally the language of yesh lismoch doesn't usually refer to a extremely enthusiastic endorsement, but says in a situation one can rely on this. So that seems to just if we're analyzing his words. So one, he says the multiple voices can't be heard. He personally doesn't see it, but Rav Hildesheimer said it, and who can argue with him? And the part that it's mirot as opposed to a modest type of singing. So he says because it may not fit into the category of the type of singing that's mentioned in the Gemara, and will have the effect of awakening enthusiasm for Judaism, so yesh lismoch. There's basis, there's upon what to rely to permit it in this case, and this was the tshuva, the response that he sent to this Yeshurun youth group.
So how do they come to grips with what's stated in number one from Shmuel and Yeshayahu, that it's not even, forget about the singing, it's just that the voice itself is the Erva.
So
in other words, you've got. I know you've tried to, and you've done a good job of showing that you know this concept can evolve. But I'm not sure you really address the fact that it's not no longer considered. It's you're basically saying it's no longer considered erva.
So
how do you come to grips with the fact that it's no longer like you're it's against what the pshat says.
So I'm not sure that I. Well, I didn't mean to say at least that it's no longer considered erva objectively, but based on other considerations, modern either group singing in the most permissive of the Sri Dei Eish or radio or microphone may not fit into the category. But about the psukim in Shmuel and Yishayahu, that those perhaps, I would suggest, that are like what in Source 5, what the Rashba says, and we see in the Rambam and the Ramah, that there's a distinction made between the nature of the either the conversation, the Rashba's case, or in familiarity and in context.
See, I happen to believe that what's in Shmuel and Shir Shirim is metaphor. You know, because it's always, you know, the God is the husband and Yisrael is the wife. And you know, it even says in our Haggadah, you know, your hair was long and you were on, you know, in other
right.
words, we have these metaphors that are used all the time. Now, you can't argue with what Shmuel says directly, but, you know, if there is some, I you know, it is a bit of, there's metaphoric context here.
Right. And also, halacha is generally not learned from even biblical sources outside of Chumash, which is why many poskim hold that Kol Isha is derabbanan, because the sources that the Gemara quotes are those from Navi and Ketuvim, and not from
Gemara has
Chumash.
The points. The Gemara is also here, though, which is a bit problematic. That's the only one I would say is problematic, really.
For which modern position in particular?
The voice. I mean, in other words, just the voice itself.
Right, so the question is, what is the voice? Is it the singing voice? Are we assuming, is it understood to be the singing voice or the voice itself?
What else is it? I mean, whether you sing or talk, it's still a woman's voice, right?
Right, but maybe a singing voice, and this is the way the Shulchan Aruch understands it, maybe the singing voice has a quality that that the speaking voice doesn't. Maybe it's also a question of it being ragil, of it being more accustomed to speaking.
Right.
But as you pointed out earlier, the Gemara Kedushin doesn't make a distinction between singing and speaking, and the fact that it was one of the sages was asking the other one to give greetings to his wife suggests that perhaps it was even speaking. But then we have the Rashba, who says that with speaking, so that could depend on context.
Does it matter if the woman is Jewish or not? Like, is that all voices, or just if it's a woman's Jewish woman's voice?
I think even if it's a non-Jewish woman's voice, I don't remember. It was definitely mentioned in sources that I looked at making the distinction or addressing the that question. I'll try to recheck that. I've definitely seen that addressed at least as a distinction, but I think at the end of the day, it's with both. But that distinction, I know, has been mentioned.
If it's a nagging voice.
Right, so it seemingly doesn't make a distinction.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Right. So
whose wife are we talking about?
Disciplining a child and a husband?
Syria.
So and just the last source 15 from Rav Moshe Feinstein. His tshuva was responding to a question: at what age does the prohibition of Kol Isha apply? Because you mentioned some erva for a girl, it's a question whether it's 3 or older when she starts developing. There are different opinions there. Kol Isha, he says, really when a girl starts menstruating. So he says the age 11 as a standard. You know, at different times that could vary. But he says below that, so there's no issue of Kol Isha. So I hope through this discussion you're able to understand the issue of Kol Isha better, maybe dispel some misconceptions, maybe have other ones. But I think at the end of the day, Poskim have addressed, or Avadya said, I didn't put this part in the sheet, and others, that we can't say that just because we're more used to something in and of itself, that we can say that the issue of Kol Isha goes by the wayside. However, and it's something to ask one's own halakhic authority, but it seems like there are cases where, in modern applications, that there are cases where there are grounds to be lenient. So the ones that we discussed, right, that the rate either it's a reproduced voice or it doesn't have all the components of both seeing the woman and hearing the voice, or if it's a purpose for the purpose of not immodesty but to the contrary of Avodas Hashem. So, like with all halakhic issues, it's important to see what the sources say and see what the poskim say, and turn to our own halakhic authorities for